Welcome to Transition, Gadget 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about God of War, the India launch, which was, well, let's just say it was adventurous. And we're also going to be talking about GTA Premium Online Edition, that's GTA 5, which has come out just now. And we have lots of details specifically about India also. And apart from that, we're going to be talking about the games we've been playing this week. And to do all of this, we have our games editor, Rishi Albani.
Adventurous is putting it very diplomatically and lightly. And welcome to the show, Pranay.
Yeah, and
since you're our host.
And we have...
I don't want to forget like last time.
Friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
Yes, still.
Yeah.
For now.
All right.
Start and... the podcast, boy.
Yeah, so if you don't get what Mike was referring to, he is trying to put on his grim Kratos face because that's what Kratos is in God of War 2018 or God of War 4 or God of War, as they want to call it. Yeah. Though they should have called it God of Last of Us, but the game.
Do not make jokes, boy.
Don't trust that Sky Beast.
So the game's been out since April 20 in most parts of the world. I use the term most parts of the world because India got the standard edition allegedly on time. I'll tell you why allegedly in a second. But the limited and collector's editions were delayed, and they still are delayed as of the recording of this podcast. We've been given to understand that they should be available at retail from April 25th onwards. The standard edition, why I said was allegedly on time, was because Mumbai had it on launch day, but Bangalore had it delayed till end of launch day, and Delhi, I think, also got it late as well. So, long story short, Sony pretty much messed up God of War for India. The midnight launches almost got canned. In fact, I think all midnight launches across India got canned except for one in Mumbai because they got stock on time. And everyone else pretty much didn't get the game on time for a midnight launch. And I think there were like 5 or 10 of them that were planned across the country. There was one in Chennai, there was one in Hyderabad, one in Bangalore, a couple in Mumbai. Most of them got cancelled. Except for one, which was done by Games of Shop because Games of Shop wanted to push something out. Most people probably at this point in time may haven't reached the end of the game yet. We have, and long story short, it is really, really good. Perhaps one of the best games this generation. And yes, we don't use that lightly. The India midnight launch was interesting because... even though we didn't go, we did see a lot of photos around it, and Sony did promise some freebies. But Mike, can you tell us what freebies were actually given?
So, in some of the events worldwide and pre-order, usually what happens is with big games, pre-orders in some retailers get you some goodies. In India, usually these are restricted to midnight launches, or if you order from, like, say, Games A Shop for some of their titles, you get a t-shirt free. With God of War, there were keychains worldwide, there were posters, there were, I believe I even saw a t-shirt somewhere. What happened in India is there was no actual God of War merchandise. It was just like standard PlayStation merchandise in the form of lanyards and t-shirts, which were, you know, they were used at IGX and they were used at other events which Sony attends to represent PlayStation. So it wasn't really like, you know, official merchandise for God of War. What was promised didn't actually end up being God of War merchandise. It was just generic Sony India, PlayStation India stuff, which I'm not really sure most people care about, at least the God of War fans or like normal people also. Yeah. So it was pretty disappointing because for one, a lot of us, like including both Rishi and me, we ordered the limited edition, even though we have the game early, like for review and coverage and all. So... that got delayed. We still don't have it. And a lot of people who like pre-ordered and prepaid 9,500 rupees for the collector's edition also still don't have their copy. Some of them have even like, you know, canceled their orders, or they've like made do with buying it digitally, finish it. And when they get the collector's edition, they'll probably end up selling the disc or something because they just wanted to play the game. And like, at least I haven't finished it. I think I'm about halfway through. It's like pretty fantastic so far. So yeah, it's very disappointing seeing what happened because with... like when they announced they were bringing the limited and collector's edition along with standard, I thought maybe this is like a turning point for them, that they're finally realizing that, you know, we need to do this stuff for India. Uncharted 4, the biggest game before this, I'd say, didn't have anything. Like gray market sellers got the limited edition overpriced and it still hasn't sold. God of War in the end will be the other way around because everyone was so conservative with getting orders. It, like, aside from people who are going to resell and a few cancellations, I don't think the limited edition is going to be available easily once it actually does make its way into India at stores.
Yeah, I mean, if we compare and contrast, and why this is important is because the God of War franchise has been exceedingly popular in India. The last mainline entry, God of War 3, sold 10,000 units day one in India alone. And that was with the PS3 user base at around, I think, 150,000 consoles. So yeah, it's been a powerhouse of a franchise. And with this game, from what we've been given to understand, God of War PS4 day one quantity is in the range of 50 to 70,000, depending who you ask. And that definitely puts it a lot higher than what it did in previous titles.
And this is not including the gray market stock, which is definitely going to be...
Yeah,
not it's not a number you can just disregard for a game like this.
Yeah, so this is just official stock. That's not even counting limited and collector's editions. And what we've spoken to retailers, the retailers I've spoken to, I've seen mixed responses. We've seen that there are some people who are canceling limited editions. There's some people who are canceling collector's editions. But mainly limited is the one that's getting canceled. Now, what does this mean for you? Well, if you didn't pre-order God of War limited edition and you want to now... At the time of recording this podcast, yeah, it's still available at a few places, Amazon, Flipkart, and maybe a local store. The sooner you pull the trigger on it, the better, because I frankly think this will eventually sell out sooner rather than later. The other thing also to keep in mind is while there were no Sony freebies at the midnight launch related to God of War per se, there was just one exception, which is the posters. We don't know if these were official Sony posters or printed by retailers, but yeah, posters were there.
So, and going back to the whole limited edition availability thing, Horizon Zero Dawn had a limited edition world, like in European territories, India comes under Europe, if you aren't aware, for Sony. That actually is super hard to find now worldwide. Now, God of War, it might end up like Uncharted 4, where you can still easily get the collector's edition and the limited edition if you know where to look. Horizon is very difficult to find that limited edition, which had a steelbook and art book. So, we'll have to see what happens with God of War, because... given its reviews and given its day one sales worldwide and all so far, I think it might be hard to find. So if you do really want it, you might want to like, you know, plot down money at the retailer to like show them that you actually are serious and not just, you know, like how people buy cell phones in India. Let me know when it comes in stock and no one actually buys it. So you might want to like, if you're serious, go tell your retailer or at least Amazon and pay for it in advance. That increases your chances of getting it.
Yeah. And as for the reason of the delay of the LE and CE, well, until the time of this recording of this podcast, it's very perplexing that Sony India has not made an official statement nor responded to our several requests for comment. That's what we know officially. Unofficially, though, after speaking to a bunch of people at retail and people in the supply chain, it seems that allegedly Sony knew that the collectors and limited edition would be delayed for India, but did not tell retailers till the day of launch of the game. And they knew that there would be a delay. They knew that the standard edition would be the only one that would be there relatively available on time. But then they didn't say anything. They let retailers keep taking pre-orders for the limited and collector's editions. And they didn't even bother confirming that it's going to be delayed or not. So, I mean, which is pretty stupid, because as a consumer, I rather know that a limited edition I'm ordering is going to be delayed than not knowing, than only to be disappointed at launch day. And honestly, I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that Sony India, while being the biggest and possibly most profitable gaming company here, doesn't quite understand its user base and doesn't quite understand the importance of getting things on time. I mean, we've even seen this in the past with Horizon Zero Dawn that was delayed by a week due to logistical issues. We've seen this in the past with Shadow of the Colossus that was also delayed due to logistical issues. And with that game, it was amusing because we had irate Indian fans ranting at Shuhei Yoshida, who is the head of Worldwide Studio Sony. And even then, Sony India didn't have any... didn't even bother issuing a statement on its delay. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a PlayStation fan here, it's kind of disturbing because the number one player doesn't even care, it seems.
The funny thing is, speaking of Horizon Zero Dawn, the complete edition, which only showed up in India much later through a console bundle, actually did see a standalone release as well. In fact, we knew about this when we saw copies on the shelf at Games the Shop for $2,499, which was imported months after it officially launched last year worldwide. So yeah, pretty disappointing seeing how some releases are handled over here by Sony. So.
Yep. And anyway, now since we got all the angsty, annoying... let's be real talk out of the way. In terms of impressions, well, we got a bunch of them on the site. We've got the review. We've got a breakdown of the combat. We've got an entire post on spoilers, if that's your thing. And we've also got tips and tricks to get you started. But our general takeaway has been that this is perhaps one of the best games for the PlayStation 4. If you own a PlayStation 4, you need to pick it up. It's right up there with Yakuza 0. It's definitely well worth playing. The story, in my opinion, is the strongest it's been for a Sony first-party title. Yes, even better than Uncharted. Yes, even better than Last of Us. Yes, even better than the past God of War games. But then I don't know who played the earlier God of War games for story. But yeah, I mean, there's no emo Kratos. There's a grimmer, wiser protagonist. There's a really cool sidekick and his son. And there's a host of really, really good characters that help you get immersed in a very cool world that uses Norse mythology to its fullest. So yeah, definitely check it out. But then that aside, Mike, what are your thoughts on gameplay?
Really, really good. Like, you know, when people start comparing it to Last of Us, now before anyone raises their pitchforks, I mean, they've been raised before when we've made fun of Souls fans, but I didn't actually care for the gameplay in The Last of Us. It was probably the weakest bit. I played it for the rest of it. So God of War gameplay is fantastic. Combat, fantastic. Feels amazing. Once you start upgrading your skills and all that, gets even better. Basically, no complaints when it comes to combat. The way they've integrated puzzles into the story, into how you have to solve puzzles. Some of them are timed. Some of them are... The environment also has a few puzzles which kind of reminded me of some stuff from The Witness, which you need to like pay attention and see and all. Just pretty mind-blowing. And a lot of the areas which you walk into genuinely reminded me of the Lord of the Rings movies. You know, the scale when they show those big statues, big things in the thing and all. Really, really good. So, yeah, basically really loving it so far. And the music is fantastic. Like, I thought, you know, like I was making jokes about why Amon Amarth should do the soundtrack because Norse mythology and all, but the soundtrack is really, really good.
What I want to know is, like, is this very cutscene heavy and story driven, or like, have they done the Horizon Zero Dawn thing where there are not any cutscenes and still
no, so everything is, it's like they've been talking about how the whole game is one whole shot where there are no camera cuts and all that for the quote-unquote cinematic nature. The pacing is fantastic. I'm trying to think of the last game I played that was paced this well. So it's really good, handled really well. You're not like, you know, your controller's put down, you have to watch 45-minute cutscenes like MGS4 or Yakuza 6 or something like that. It's all handled really well. The transition from cutscene to gameplay is really good. You just don't get bored at all.
Actually, I frankly felt that it's not even seamless. It's just like non-existent. The transition's like non-existent. You don't feel, even when you are in a cutscene, you don't feel like you're in a cutscene. And that has to do with the fact that it's a single shot take of the entire game. The camera remains unchanged. And even in those sections, you don't end up putting your controller down because you never know when control is going to be passed back to you. So it handles that expectation, which you kind of get into about a cutscene very differently. And I think that's one of the finer elements of the game that way. There were several points in the game where I didn't put the controller down because you don't know when it's being handed back to you. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. So that sounds good. And how long is the campaign?
So, if you're playing it on the easiest mode and just want to blitz through everything, you're probably still looking at around 20-25 hours.
That's quite meaty.
Yeah, it's like more than double of the previous God of War game.
And after you finish the campaign, like, is there more stuff to do?
Yeah, there's a lot more to do. And in fact, what's amusing is that I'm still playing it post-campaign, not to complete stuff, but because so I can get more info drips on the story. So what happens is midway through the game, now this is not even spoiler territory at this stage, where you meet a character called Mimir, who in Norse mythology is the smartest man in the world. He joins you on your trip, and from time to time, he'll drop lovely bits of information about the world around you. And a lot of that kind of adds to the atmosphere, adds to the lore of the game, which borrows very wisely from Norse mythology plus their own inputs. So I'm just playing it for that, just to get as many info drips and as many sound bites from Mimir as possible. So yeah, that. And that aside, from a pure gameplay standpoint, once you're done with the campaign, there are these corrupt Valkyries that roam the game world, who you can beat for cool items. And once you're done with the main campaign, there are a ton of side quests as well. So, and they're pretty decent in the sense that you're usually up against high level enemies and you solve a bunch of puzzles, and they lead you to explore different parts of the game world that aren't explored in the main quest. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty expansive. Even post campaign play, you will get your time and money out of it.
And the structure is really good in the sense, like, it borrows a lot from Metroidvania style games, but in the hub world type system where you see stuff and you see enemies early on which you cannot take on right now, like optional areas, optional enemies. And then you realize, like, when you get skills or you level up later, oh, I should go back and check this out. And they reward you for that quite well. In fact, a lot of the... there are these like treasure chests, or like basically chests in the environment. Some of them have runes you have to basically unlock. They're like 3 runes for some of these specific ones. And a lot of them have their own puzzles as well. So it kind of reminded me a lot of like The Witness again over there. So they have these very nice, very interesting and intelligent puzzles for these things. Early on, they'll be like very basic. Oh, you see these 3 symbols, you just, like, you know, throw your axe on them, you unlock the thing and you get rewarded. But later on, they get pretty complicated. It's very nicely done and yeah, just really good.
Okay then, cool. So the other thing we want to talk about is GTA Premium Online Edition. So what the hell is this about?
So a few weeks ago or a month ago or something, GTA 5 Premium Online Edition, or Premium Edition as it was recalled in the rating, was rated for release on PS4 and Xbox One. At the time, everyone assumed, because that's how most audiences are now online, it was something to do with the Switch. Well, it turned out it has nothing to do with the Switch. Rockstar announced and released on the same day, because that's what Rockstar does, GTA 5 Premium Online Edition at retail for PS4 and Xbox One, and digitally for PS4, Xbox, and PC. When this went up for pre-order or just order in India on Games Shop, it was $4,499, and we were like, what's happening? Why is it more expensive? Now, games are getting more expensive in India, so given GTA 5 launched at $3,499 a few years ago, you'd assume $3,999 is standard, like it's par for the cost. But looking at the pricing abroad, it's actually not that expensive in India, because it's $80 at retail in the US and it's £60 in the UK, and it's Game UK exclusive, which means it's even more expensive than it should be. £60 with the current conversion is around like a little less than 6,000 rupees. $80 is more than 5,000 rupees. So $4,499 in India doesn't seem terrible.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that when we looked online and we checked how much it would cost to buy GTA digitally, along with all the content that comes with it, you're still spending close to $5,500 versus $4,499. So that's another thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's actually more expensive digitally in the US also. Like on PSN and Xbox Live, it's $80 to buy it physically, $85 digital for some reason. And what the difference is to the copy you bought a few years ago is this has a $40 GTA Online Criminal Enterprise Starter Pack. This gives you, it's basically just, you know, in-game currency. So it gives you basically a lot of in-game money, which would cost you a lot more if you actually buy it through those shark cards, as far as we're aware, at least as of this recording. But is it worth buying now? That's the question, which it depends on how much you play GTA Online, or if you've not played GTA, somehow you're one of the few people left in the world in consoles and PC who hasn't played GTA 5. Yes, Pranay, looking at you. If you do want to pick it up, it might still end up being cheaper than buying the base game for GTA 5 and buying the expansion, because the cheapest we've seen GTA 5 new is about $2,500. So this is going to cost $40 more if you buy it digitally. So
yeah, but then the other thing to keep in mind is, if you're just looking to pick up GTA for single player, this doesn't make sense. You're still better off buying the standard edition of the game for $2,500 to $2,700. Second thing to keep in mind is the standard edition of the game, as far as we know, at the time of recording this podcast, is not going away. It'll still be sold on the shelves in India, at least. And one more thing to keep in mind is, if you're the sort who's playing on PC, and yes, I know a lot of you are, considering the number of comments we got on our God of War live stream asking if it's coming to PC, there is no GTA 5 Premium Online Edition physical PC copy. There's no PC copy on disc. There's no physical copy. At the time of recording this podcast, Rockstar and Take-Two haven't confirmed or committed to that just yet. all we know so far is that if you're on PC and if you want the GTA 5 Premium Online Edition, you can only buy it via Steam or via the Rockstar Club, which is Rockstar's own digital platform. So that's something to keep in mind if you're looking to play GTA Premium Online on PC. But as for console users, I frankly don't know how much value they're going to see, because the game gets routinely discounted on sales. It gets routinely discounted on digitally and offline retail as well. That said, the discount range hasn't been that hot, simply because GTA always sees demand here. And even till now, it's one of the best-selling games in the country. So your mileage may vary, but I just say that if you're looking to play just the story mode, don't bother. If you're looking to get if you've been invested in the online play and continue to stay invested in the online play, you could consider this.
Also, to note is from the unboxing video which we've seen, at least in the US, this is the same unpatched disc which was available a few years ago on PS4 and Xbox One. Initially, I thought, given how well the game is selling, like it's crossed 90 million sales worldwide on all platforms, I thought this would be like, you know, all the updates, because you need to download more than, I think, 10 to 15 GB if you put the disc in right now. It still has nothing on disc. You have a vanilla GTA 5, which has GTA Online included, but without the patches. And you have a code to download this Criminal Online Starter Pack.
Yeah, and keep in mind that most of the patches for GTA 5 right now have to do with the online mode. So again, if you're playing this offline and if you're planning to just, and if you end up getting this, I don't know, if you're lucky enough to get this at a discount, and if you just plan to play the offline, play single player, you don't need to update, just stay offline and play the game.
Exactly. Or you can, you know, just go to certain places online and get the single player edition for cheap, like 1700-1800.
Yeah, I mean, eBay, yeah. Flipkart, Amazon started selling used games as well. So you can try your luck at places like that. But then, I mean, so your mileage will vary with this. The way I see it in the long term, I think this is just Rockstar's way of keeping GTA more relevant than it's been, because it's super relevant in the online space. So it's nice to see them throw retail a bone and make sure retail's still relevant. But I think in the long term, we're going to see this replace the standard edition. Obviously, they're not going to say that now. But I have a feeling that's the case. And plus, it lets people realize that Rockstar is still a thing, which is a good way to get people hyped about a certain Red Dead Redemption 2. Because, I mean, let's be honest, I won't be surprised if they use this as a vehicle to let people know Red Dead Redemption 2 is a thing in one way or another.
Yeah, in fact, while we haven't seen an unboxing yet, it's possible that...
You just said...
No, sorry, unboxing for European or the India copy yet... it likely has a flyer inside for Red Dead Redemption 2 saying pre-order now or something. And like, that's the best way to get the word out, in addition to, like, you know, advertising online and press releases and stuff like that. So yeah, I definitely think they're going to phase out the standard edition, because in a lot of sales, they usually discount not just the base game. They always have a discount on GTA 5 with shark cards, which are basically online currency for using GTA Online. So they're basically going to slow down on discounting the standard edition, I feel, and they're going to discount this. In a lot of cases, we've seen you have a game which is $60 get discounted to, say, $50. But you have a game with some DLC, or in this case, shark cards, which is usually $80-$90, that get discounted to $60, which makes it seem like better value. That's pretty much what they're going to do going forward.
Yeah, and to put this all into perspective, GTA 5, at least according to reports and several analysts, is the biggest selling entertainment product of all time. And I mean, GTA and this pack seems to be just exist to drive the point home and to take things further. How successful will it be at retail? Well, we've already been hearing murmurs from retailers saying $4,499 too expensive, but I still think it has a decent shot, because GTA is GTA. So
yep. Right then, so I think we're ready to move to the games we've been playing this week. I'll go first. I've been playing this game called Nier Automata. I mean, again, welcome to 2017 to me. So I played about 60 to 70% of the single player campaign, like the first playthrough, because apparently this game has some 26 endings, which are all like unlocked by doing some random things apart from completing the main story. From what I know, if you die in the like prologue itself, there's like a funny ending. So like that, you unlock many endings in that. But I'm playing it mostly for the story. I don't really care much about the combat and all, which has been very well appreciated.
Sacrilege!
Yeah.
Why are you even here?
Yeah, but I honestly, see, the problem is that I'm really bad at shooting with the controller. Like, So if you're not good at aiming and all, and if you get motion sickness like I do, this game is really good because it has a super easy mode which sort of does the firing on its own for you and like lets you play the game without like puking. And it also has a setting in the like if you go to the options, you'll find a setting which says reduce motion sickness. So what it does is the left stick, which is used for movement, right? And right stick is used for the camera. So I think right stick, it really slows down the camera movement. So if you want to like turn the camera around, it like goes at like a snail's pace. But then ever since I enabled that setting, I have really felt a lot better while playing this game. So the important thing with Nier Automata is that it switches from 2D to 3D and back, right? Constantly. And also there are times when like you think it's a 2D level, but then suddenly you realize that the character can move forward and back. So they play a lot with the perspective. So those modes, when it's in the 2D mode, I have no issues with. But when it goes into the proper 3D mode and when you have to shoot and like do a bunch of combat things with a bunch of enemies, and when you have to just run through the desert to the other end to, you know, before you unlock the teleportation thingy, at that time I was getting a lot of motion sickness in this game because of the way the camera moves and all.
So it's basically the anti-God of War given its perspective jumps.
Yeah, it is. So because of that, like I was having a lot of trouble playing this game. So I just switched to the super easy mode and I said, okay, fine, I can, you know, live without the combat because the story is really good and I'll play the game for the story alone. And yeah, I'm about 60% through it and I'm planning to play it thrice, finish all the three endings, because in this game apparently you can buy all the trophies. You can get yourself a platinum trophy by buying the gold, silver and bronze trophies.
Watch out next year as Pranay tells us how cool God of War is. No, but jokes aside, yeah, it's a really cool game. It's super super subversive, but I don't agree with you in terms of combat, simply because while yes, you can play it on easy mode, but the sheer spectacle of stuff that goes on still makes it really cool. Because I'm equally bad at most games like this. But fact of the matter is, but then again, maybe it's because I played Bayonetta, I played Vanquish. I like this style of combat where the last minute dodge gives you a bit of an advantage in terms of slowing down time. So at least to me, the sheer spectacle of it makes it worth checking out, even from a pure mechanic standpoint.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I do agree that, like, completely. And there are also like sort of, this game is not open world at all, but there are some elements where you can actually reach an area where like you're not supposed to be in. So once what happened was I was near this, there's a waterfall.
You're near.
Yeah, I was near. There's a waterfall where like I was trying to jump on a rock above and go like to the higher level, but accidentally I missed that jump and I fell down like and lost about 60% of my health. And I was at level 10 at that time, and I reached like an area where which is close to the flooded city. So that's the access pathway. So once you unlock the story, like once you reach a certain level in the story, it gives you a ladder to go to a certain place in that, and then it opens another door where you can access the flooded city. But at that point it was not open, so I landed amongst a bunch of robots which are like level 27 and I am level 10, so destroying them was very difficult for me. But I somehow managed to, I did not die in that place, and I explored that entire area and somehow managed to find my way back up. So some elements of that game are like that. And you can also reach that forest kingdom place. You can reach the entrance, you can't go inside. So there are places where you can be without even like unlocking the proper story. So exploring the world is also fun in that way. But my only complaint is that they don't give you fast travel soon enough in the game. Like how a lot of games do it is once you unlock a level, like you have to travel to that place once manually. And then once you get there, then you can fast travel between like places quite easily. But in this game, yeah, I think about 50% into the story, you get that fast travel mechanic. And until then, you just have to keep running around. And luckily, I discovered that you can actually use a bunch of animals as your horses. So any random animal on the, like you find them, you like give them that bait. And then you can like sort of use them as your fast travel mechanism. So you can reach places much faster, but it's still not ideal. And of course, this has manual save, but you can save at any point. You don't need to go to a phone booth like
Except
Yakuza.
Except for the opening, for the prologue.
Yeah, which has broken quite a few people we know who have just given us, screw this game, I can't play it, there's no shaving and stuff like that.
We've heard way too many people complain about that in our lives.
I cannot believe
hilarious.
People have dropped Nier Automata because they got, I mean, I've done the same mistake in the past with Deus Ex Human Revolution. I chose give me Deus Ex without having played a shooter in a long time, and it destroyed me in the prologue section, and I was like, screw this game, it feels like Call of Duty. So we've made this mistake, but the thing is, like, persevere, it's worth it. That first opening section, if you can't handle it, tone down the difficulty.
Yeah, it's okay.
We won't laugh at you.
Don't tell anyone. Confidentiality guaranteed.
Yeah, so I played the first section on some normal difficulty level, I think. Like, the entire prologue where, like, you are in that flight unit and you're shooting at people and then finally, like, you enter a Goliath-class enemy. Played the full thing, finished it in normal difficulty. That's when I got my motion sickness and then I decided, okay, fine, now it's time to tone it down. And I think since then, I've just enjoyed the game because, you know, the story is really good. And I love the way they tell the story also. Like, they it's not like, you know, the plot is revealed to you right at the beginning. Like, all of this, the scope of this thing, the magnitude of this thing, it all gets revealed to you slowly. So,
and,
yeah.
Like, a lot more will make sense on your second playthrough of the main opening story, or Route B, as they call it. So,
yeah.
But one thing I need to talk about with the combat is Platinum always does this where they make their game super accessible. Like Bayonetta, you can make it as hard or as easy as you want, and you can even play Bayonetta with the full touchscreen on the Switch, which is a very interesting way to play it. Like, you can literally play the whole game as a touchscreen. Now, that'll blow people's mind once they see how Bayonetta actually looks. But yeah, Nier is very accessible because of that.
Yeah, and I remember a running joke around the time Bayonetta first hit back in 2008. Was director Hideki Kamiya actually telling people, yeah, you can play the game literally with one hand because we want to make it that accessible.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I really appreciate it because, frankly, if not for that reduced motion sickness option, I would have been really at sea. Like, at normal difficulty, I could have easily, like, learned how to, do the combat stuff properly and, like, win the game the right way, as they say it. But the thing is, like, you know, if I wanted to spend that much time in the game and all of that, then yeah, I would probably quit this job and just, you know, learn how to play the game properly. It would take too much time for me. Unfortunately, my skills are not that good in this game. I did not have this problem in Yakuza 0 because it's like more fist punching based and it's not shooting based as much. I don't think I used the guns much in the game at all. I always stuck
to... Yakuza had guns?
Yeah.
Oh no, spoiler, bro.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm cut out to play third-person shooting games that much. Even The Last of Us, Mike, you had mentioned it earlier on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
So I finished the full game and I absolutely hated shooting anything in that game. Like, I played it for the story. It was really good.
Yeah, because
it's
like
the
one bullet and there'll be like three enemies and you have to like... It reminds me of God of War puzzles with how little ammo you have in Last of Us.
Yeah. Last of Us ammo is, I think until about 80% of the story, the ammo is always a struggle. In like, at least, you know, once you are ahead in the story, you can make other weapons, right? You can make a bomb and can keep crafting other...
No, that was there early on, but like, yeah. Dude, it's not worth it in the end. Just go pet a giraffe, best game ever. Like.
Gosh, such hate.
Yeah, but the story was really good even in that game.
It was
so
simple. If you knew how to use the shiv, it was damn simple to get past enemies. I don't know what to say about you guys.
Cool then. So the other game I've been playing is Million Onion Hotel. I picked it up again. It's on iOS and I really enjoyed it. It's like a weird game. I don't know how to describe it. Like there's like a bunch of tiles and you have to sort of make rows and diagonally straight, left, right. So once you do that, then it sort of unlocks more levels in there and like you get a story mode as well inside. So I think I reached level 49 before I died last time because at that level they suddenly like just drop bombs and you have like a timer. So once the timer goes to zero, your game is up. You can't really die there. You just run out of time. So all those time bombs that keep falling on your head, like they destroy you entirely. Like I had some 6 minutes or 7 minutes of time left and I still lost it because, you know, couldn't handle it fast enough. But yeah, it's a fun game. Like I would highly recommend that you check it out. It's hard to describe, but it's fun to play. So yeah, anyway, Rishi.
Well, I've been playing a lot of South Park on the Switch. The game's out, I think, released on April 24th, the day before the recording of this April 24th, I think, on the day of recording this podcast. Been playing quite a bit of it. It's really good. I mean, the only problem I've had is the fact that there are way too many loading screens. But then Ubisoft released one patch that's fixed half of it. There's hopefully they'll release another one that rectifies the problem completely. The only other minor issue you may have is the fact that it doesn't come with the DLC. And the DLC is really, really good. I finished it off on the Xbox prior to playing it on the Switch, and it's really good. I'm just surprised Ubisoft decided to go in a direction that could possibly open them up to lawsuits, as is wont with all things South Park. But I've been playing basically that. It's so good. And I recommend checking it out if you have a Switch. If you don't have a Switch, check it out on PS4, check it out on Xbox One, check it out on PC. It's a really good game. And it runs on almost anything. So, yeah, you'll be fine. So, basically, been playing a lot of South Park. Hopefully just waiting out to see what Detroit 2 Become Human holds for us in terms of the demo. But yeah, mainly South Park.
So I've been playing a lot of original Xbox games on the Xbox One because when they announced original Xbox backward compatibility is coming, I was like, okay, yeah, no big deal. Like the games they showed off weren't really interesting to me at the time, except for Knights of the Old Republic. But then I have that on iOS already, and that's like a proper remake of it or whatever. So I actually ended up picking up a few of them. Like I picked up when they announced Panzer Dragoon Orta, which is like this on-rail shooter thingy. Never played it before. Got it. It's really good. Like the backward compatibility team, I think, is better than any of their first party studios at this stage, given the output they've been putting and how well the games run now. Like Knights of the Old Republic, that used to hover between 20 and 33 FPS on the original Xbox and Xbox 360, is unlocked, and it even hit 60 in a lot of cases on the Xbox One S, not even the One X. Panzer Dragoon Orta, super smooth. Morrowind also looks really good. The only problem is, at least Rishi's running into this, is a lot of these games were built for non-widescreen or 4:3 at the time. Panzer Dragoon Orta was 16:10. Yeah, so it's like sort of widescreen, but these games usually have black bars on the left and the right. And other than that, they're really good conversions. They've done really good jobs. Obviously, there are no achievements in all of these. But very impressed, and if you have the original discs, you can just put them in and it'll download the game and you can start playing. And also, and a lot of these games are surprisingly cheap in India, like they're 450 and 499 rupees, while they're like $10. Oh, and also it's 450, 499 plus tax, so comes to about 580 or 560 depending on a lot of things.
Yeah, when I picked up Panzer Dragoon Orta, it ended up being like close to 580, even though it was, I think, 450.
499.
499 because of taxes and other things that Microsoft adds on top. But yeah, I will agree with Mike that at least Panzer Dragoon, which is the only one I played on my Xbox One X, looks really good. I've played the original back on the OG Xbox. Yes, I'm old. And it looks really, really good. Plays well. Lighting is superb. The models look great. It looks really nice at high res at 1080p. And yeah, I'm a little bummed out with the black bars on either side, but at least it's a lot less jarring compared to, let's say, Morrowind, which is like complete 4:3. So yeah, I mean, if you're the sort who has an Xbox One S or One X and wants to check out what Microsoft has in terms of backwards compatibility, I highly recommend checking the screenshots of each game so you get an idea of what has what is letterboxed and what isn't.
And also, like, they've put out a lot of comparison videos showing, like, in real time how games like Knights of the Old Republic are on the original Xbox versus Xbox One S. Not even One X. One X runs everything 4 times the resolution of the One S, which is already running at much higher than the original Xbox. So very, very good. If I had an Xbox One X, I'd check out Red Dead Redemption because that looks, frankly, mind-blowing. It got an Xbox One X enhanced patch. Other than that, been playing Cosmic Star Heroine on Vita. It's a fantastic game if you like JRPGs. Do not buy Lost Sphere and I Am Setsuna if you want a Chrono Trigger-like game. Buy this instead. And other than that, been playing God of War here and there, but we already discussed that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's all we have for this episode of Transition. And we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening.